Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X-Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from eastern Kentucky, right up against the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast, 31 degrees, clear tonight. You might be able to look out and see Jupiter next to the moon tonight if you have a view. Also, be aware, the last day of December, the blue moon will come out. Many of you are getting ready for the holidays, and some of you are listening tonight. We were supposed to have Nicholas Redfern on tonight. He has had a minor health issue, no problem. He's going to recover just fine, but is unable to be with us tonight. So, tonight, you are the special guest. Our phone lines will be open all night. The number, if you want to be part of the program, is 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. These numbers are also posted at bbsradio.com. We are proud to be members of the BBS Radio Network, or you can also find the number at xsquaredradio.com. The solar wind tonight is up to 336.6 kilometers per second. Sunspots. We have sunspots. 1035, 1036, and 1037 are active and high latitude in nature, clearly members of solar cycle 24. Could this be the beginning of the solar maximum we have been waiting for, or perhaps dreading? The December solstice occurs on Monday, December 21st. When the sun dips to its lowest celestial latitude of the year. The event marks the beginning of summer in the southern hemisphere and winter in the northern hemisphere. And from what I can see of the winter storms that have been pounding the east, we have a leg up on it, as we say in the south, and also some wonderful sunsets at Stonehenge. Happy solstice, everyone. There were only 15 earthquakes around the world in the last 24 hours, only one greater than 5.0 on the Richter scale. All is quiet the week before Christmas. Peace and tranquility, joy and happiness. The first electric truck came off the assembly line today in Williamsburg, Kentucky. The truck was whisper quiet, except for the sound of the highway under the tires at 60 miles an hour. The truck is the first to be crash tested in the new year in its effort to be the first Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standard compliant electric pickup truck ever in America. Many cities around the nation are carrying unemployment numbers higher than those during the Depression of 1929. If you're out there without a job this Christmas, not to worry. Remember, you are always in business for yourself, and things are going to turn around, so just hang in there. All is not lost because you cannot contribute to the gross national product of Walmart. You're going to be just fine. Nothing to worry about. Okay, so don't lose hope out there. Tonight is, of course, the night before winter solstice 2009. 3 years from now is the infamous winter solstice of 2012. My question for you tonight is, what do you have planned for that fateful evening? Let's talk about it. 40 seconds. We'll be right back with X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Don't go away. We're alive, we're awake. Earth is about to pass in front of the womb of the Milky Way. Is this just another day 3 years from now? Is our calendar accurate? Many people want to know the answers to these questions. Some of you may have the answers. You may have read some interesting books on it, heard some interesting lectures, or seen some great documentaries or movies on it. That's our question for the first hour of tonight. 2012, is it an amazing awakening? Are the Mayans the only ones who left us messages about this grand and perhaps terrible passage? As you recall, if you have read the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy, on the tomb of Pakal in the area of Piedras Negras in Mexico, what was depicted from the burial tomb of this giant was a very clear arrangement of how the Earth passes in front of what's called the Rift of the Milky Way. If you live in an area without much light pollution, you look up at night at the Milky Way galaxy, you can see that there's a dark area in the center of the galaxy. This is called the Rift of the Milky Way. Many astrophysicists believe that there is a black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy, what's known as supermassive spinning black hole, and this very intense gravitational field prevents light from escaping it, and this is the cause of the dark hole in the middle of the Milky Way galaxy that you could so clearly see at night. The question is that as Earth lines up with this, what could be very planar matter, antimatter, or even gravitational field that's coming from the supermassive spinning black hole, and you can look and see the Milky Way from a distance. Well, maybe you can't, but you can look at other galaxies from perhaps the Hubble telescope, and you can see the galaxies are more or less laid out like a giant spinning sparkler with a bulge in the middle. And the bulge in the middle is perhaps where the stars and planets revolving around those stars, most of the matter of the universe coagulates around the gravitational field of the spinning black hole. The rest of the stars are lined along a planar gravitational field, which creates a sort of disc-like shape with spiral arms around it. This plane of gravity is the area that we are about to align with on December 21st, 2012. The Mayans evidently knew about this, and they depicted it, or at least Pakal did, as he put together his timeless resting place for us to discover in these days. And it also solved a lot of the mysteries of their architecture, of their religion, of the rituals. And I would say that we call it religion, but it could very well just be scientific tradition that these people lived by. The interesting thing is that on the opposite side of this rift in the Milky Way is going to be our sun. And our sun currently is awakening from a long sleep, about 790 days of solar minimum, the longest in recorded history. As it awakens, it could be heading for a solar maximum unlike those we have seen in the past. Those of you that saw the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage certainly saw a sensationalized version of what this might be like. Extra gravity on one side of the planet, extra violent solar flares on the other side of the planet, and the flares being drawn across the planet Earth like a giant conflagration. And, of course, in that movie, the depiction of some kind of off-world race, we're unsure what type, picking up pairs of small people, young people, and taking them to other worlds to begin again as Earth is cleansed as once prophesied it would be. So the question is, are the Mayans the only ones who left us messages about this grand and perhaps terrible passage? The phone numbers tonight, 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. You can call in if you know the answer or you have some input to it. It's a very interesting question. The answer, of course, is no. The Mayans were not the only ones that knew about this. Even Jesus, who was recorded in the New Testament speaking often about the end of the age, the Santella Aeon, the changing of the ages. And when we speak of this, sometimes we glaze over these things in the New Testament. We don't really know what he's talking about. Is it a parable? Is it a likeness? Is it a mystery? In cosmology, an age is commonly referred to as the tick of the clock from one zodiacal constellation to the next. Right now, we are ending the zodiacal period known as the Age of Pisces, and we are heading into the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. Hang on for a moment while I reminisce on that song. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it, that's it, that's what it's all about. Oh, you can't hear what I'm hearing. That's okay, that's okay. I know you know what I'm talking about. So what does that mean? The clock is ticking past this tick on the Mayan calendar from one age to the next. Well, this is the age that was mentioned in the New Testament by Jesus. This is the Santella Aeon. This is the end of the age. And so when he was explaining to Matthew what is going to happen at the end of the age, it is grand, and it is also terrible. I guess depends on which store you shop at. So that's a question for you to consider as this time of the year when we consider new birth and we look at life with perhaps more reverence and more mercy and more benevolence. Looking at the recent bump in the economy, which, by the way, won't trickle down to you at the job level for about 3 or 4 months as they try to prepare for the next Christmas season. We also think about the birth of change and what is going to come with a new year. It's almost a tradition in our modern world to say Merry Christmas and a altogether now Happy New Year, right? It's a new time. It's a changing it's a time in which we can change pathways. We can change habits. We can break cycles. We can mend wounds, and of course, there's always plenty of time for things to go wrong, as you can tell just by looking at the evening news, but. But perhaps we can put this together. Perhaps we can put the pieces together tonight, you and me. As I said earlier tonight, we were supposed to have Nicholas Redfern on the program. He is setting another date in January, not to worry. A minor health problem, very easily taken care of by a local dentist, and he is going to be up and on his feet in no time. So don't worry about that. To continue with the question, what do you think is going to happen to the planet and to the human race during that passage? Well, assuming that we're not going to go through what Nicolas Cage went through in the movie Knowing, we're not going to see some giant conflagration wipe the Earth clean with multi-million degree conflagration, maybe we're going to see something less cataclysmic. Maybe it won't be cataclysmic at all. Maybe it will be more metamorphic in nature. That's a very good question. And if you're out there tonight listening and you've got some ideas about it, we want you to join us here on the program. Share your thoughts with us. even Christmas wishes with us, and we'll talk about it. You know, the ancient Mayans spent a significant part of their national product, not for themselves, but for us. So why would a people spend so many years and so much of their lives on a warning for a people who would live 1,500 years in the future? You know, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't go through that much effort for the American people or the people of Earth 1,500 years in the future. I mean, we're spending our own grandchildren's inheritances. Why in the world would we care about civilization 1,500 years in the future? We think in terms of 100 more years of oil. That's our long-term thinking for our planet. So we are so modern and we are so magnanimous and forward-thinking. We're nothing compared to the Mayans. The Mayans built out of granite when they barely had copper to use as tools. The Mayans were able to align roads and their buildings and their architectures and their waterways without the use of modern transits or theodolites or levels. And yet their roads are built with large granite stones put together so tightly, even in the area of massive geotechnical activity, so tightly that you cannot fit a knife blade between these stones. What in the world could they have used to cut this granite so smoothly and so perfectly that it would fit in such a way? And after they got it cut, what in the world did they use to lift it into place? These are great questions. And they're also the kinds of questions that really set the minds of, quote, modern, sophisticated, advanced peoples whirling. We really have a wonder about it. We really have a question. Now, some of us say, what does that have to do with the price of shirts at Walmart? What does that have to do with getting my kid through one more semester of college? What does that have to do with me making my car payment or buying a home or getting married? It has everything to do with it, because it's intertwined with all of it. It is designed to be so grand and so technical and so mysterious as to have us question our own sophistication. As these things were macheted out of the jungle for the first time in the late 1800s and shown to the modern world, many historians, many archaeologists, and especially geologists were mystified, because on the one hand, some of the ages of these structures were such that they predated the Maya by a long time, maybe close to 1,000 years or more. And yet, the living, the tool making, the artwork, the use, the functionality of these structures were certainly classic Mayan. We're talking about 500 AD. We're not talking about 1200 BC. And yet, the things that were dug up that date back to 1200 BC clearly talk about these cities existing. And some of the clay layers in which bodies were exhumed and tools were exhumed and pottery was found, the geology clearly goes back further than the archaeology indicates. And so what happens when geologists and archaeologists arm wrestle? Well, I can tell you, the archaeologists win in the press. The geologists win in the science. So if they're both winners, we're thoroughly confused. We are really confused. We don't know which one is right. Maybe you know which one is right. Phone lines are open, 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511. 4515. We will also accept questions on Skype, so if you want to send that in, you can. There are many who believe that when you're righteous, when you're inspired, you might have the answers. Certainly we're not the first era when righteousness rose and wickedness fell, but there may be other reasons. There are all kinds of records out there that talk about this. Of course, there's the Book of Mormon, the American prophet Joseph Smith, who ostensibly translated golden plates into English directly, which talk about a people which may have been the people living in this area who had their races and their travels and their wars and more wars and even more wars, and fought their way all up and down the northern hemisphere of the western part of the western part of the world. So, you know, all of these sources are good to read from and good to take a note from, and in place of, or maybe in addition to, the scientific viewpoint or the engineering viewpoint that we think that these ancient peoples took, there is a religious one. There is a spiritual one that goes along with it. There's an interaction always between humans and the planet. And the question is, why was it so important to leave this message for us now? What is it that we are supposed to prepare for? Are we supposed to pause in a moment of silence and say, oh, gee, those ancient races were so advanced. Isn't that wonderful? I saw that on Discovery Channel. By the way, how much do you want for that over there? Is it a distraction or is it a focus? Is it an overlaying sort of behind-the-scenes theme that overrides everything that we go through each day? Is it a lens through which we should color our future plans? By the way, where are you going to be for December 21st, 2012? Are you going to be on the beach in California waiting for the winter solstice and perhaps the tidal waves? Or are you going to be in the mountains and high ground looking at the stars and wondering how amazing it is to look at the sky during the instant of transition from one age to the next with great anticipation? So, as we're talking about the Mayas, advanced as they were with irrigation and with working with the soil and creating living gardens, so to speak, that were self-sustaining, they never, ever ran out of fresh food. They never were subjected to harsh weather conditions with respect to ice ages or droughts. It was always one of the most lush, spontaneously abundant areas on the planet, like the Garden of Eden itself. So why weren't they able to hang around to tell themselves what was going on, to tell us what was going on? These are all good questions. One of my friends writes in, our hearts are going to change for good or for evil in an immense way. As we advance spiritually, we advance in intelligence. Yes, it can become a prideful distraction or a golden era. Good observations, actually. I like these. Keep the questions coming. So why weren't the Maya able to hang around to tell us what was going to happen? Why did they feel so compelled to leave their message in granite, in codexes, in gold plates, in statues, in various symbolisms that they left behind, relationships that they left behind? Why were there kings like Pakal and his son? Why were they so compelled, in preparing their resting place, to tell a story of how the earth was once in the future going to align itself with the womb of the galaxy? Why was this so important to them? As the king is sitting down with his burial planners as he got close to the end of his days, they asked him, gee, what do you want on your tomb, king? I suggest the nice, smooth, polished granite. Oh, no, no, the king says, nope, I want to tell the story of the serpent bar. I want to tell the story of the womb of the galaxy and how the earth is going to line up with it 1,500 years in the future, in 2010 or 2011 or 2012. That's one of the nice things about internet radio, is you can have a nice sip of fruit juice while you're speaking to people around the world. So our lines are now getting full. Our connections getting full. People all over the world now logging on to listen live to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're entering the Christmas week. And as we reflect over our year of 2009, coming out of what may have been economically terrible conditions for you in 2008, some companies struggled to hang on as long as they could and finally gave up exporting their earnings to foreign countries to lower costs and try to compete. Many of you find yourself in jobs that you do not like. You find yourself unemployed, or you find yourself terribly underemployed, and inside of you is a fire that is burning, looking for what it is you are supposed to be, what it is you are supposed to do. And these dreaming energies are extremely important. I want to put them to use tonight as we consider these questions. I want to ask you, if you can't answer the question why the Maya were not able to hang around, answer me this: where did they go? Where did the Maya go? Their bones are not found on the ground. Their tools, their pottery, their artwork, only a sampling left behind, not the evidence of hundreds of years of civilization. The fields where they planted their crops, the tools with which they managed the ground and beat the jungle into submission as they prospered in one of the most bounteous areas on the planet, is not there. The evidence is there of magnanimous living, of grand architecture, of incredible engineering with roads and waterways and underground passageways, an understanding of the cosmos, and even better, an understanding of the relationship of Earth to the cosmos, and even an understanding of the relationship of men and women to each other and to the Earth. Where did they go? There are only a very few Maya on the Earth now. Those of you that have visited them, have read their stories, have heard their songs, have listened to their testimonies, call in tonight and tell us, where did the Maya go? When did they leave? And maybe better yet, how did they leave? If they packed up everything and left, where did they go and how did they leave? Do you think they left the planet? Do you think they laid down as a collective people and died right in the middle of bounty of bounties? Do you think they caught smallpox and were wiped out? Do you think that they migrated to other countries and blended into other races? I can tell you from the human genome, this is not the case. The Maya DNA does not show up anywhere else on Earth. However, Eastern DNA does show up in the Maya. Very interesting markers in the DNA of the Maya, a very ancient people, the Maya. If you go to the Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City and you just take a brief tour, now, I have to tell you, museums in the United States dig things up carefully vet each piece. Where did it come from? Is it real? Is it even a historical fake? Or is it legitimate? And then it's carefully placed on display. And even more, the little plate in front of it clearly tells you what it is you're supposed to know about that thing that's on display. Not so in the Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City. It's just on display. It's just there, behind the glass, or out on the floor, where you can touch it and look at it and feel it and feel its energy. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. When you go there and you have the least little bit of insight into what is there and what it could possibly represent, like from this program or like from reading the trilogy, The Ark of Millions of Years. By the way, I want to throw in here a shameless commercial because it's so close to Christmas. And I know many of you have not decided what it is you want to get that favorite someone. you can go to archofmillionsofyears.com, or you can just click on the link at xsquaredradio.com, and you can buy them the trilogy of the Ark of Millions of Years. Now, this is about 1,500 pages written about the advent of 2012. The first book in the series is about the creation of the Earth and its destiny, and the second one is called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times. And it talks about the conditions here on the earth, what they mean, who could be responsible for it. It goes through the Freemasons, alchemy, goes into further detail of the union of the polarity, and we discuss 2012 in great depth. And the third one is called Unlocking the Secret. And in this book, you not only learn what might be approaching so that you can make an informed decision if you like, but you also learn what you can do about it. Not just the physical preparations, the other preparations as well. And how you can participate instead of being a spectator of the events of 2012. So, if we really had the answer of the Maya, where they went, and why did they leave, and when did they leave, and better yet, how did they leave? Let's just talk about some of these questions and talk about this amazing people and the amazing things that they built and left behind for us. The number to call in, 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. By the way, next week, we are going to have one number fits all. You can call from anywhere in the world, and that number will find the best route to come into X Squared Radio. And that's what we're looking for. Some of you have access to toll-free service, and some of you do not. And this will give you a way to get in. So there are lots of aspects, lots of points of view on this, and we want to hear them all. If it's religious in nature, that's okay. It's this time of year, and you'll forgive us if we just be as open-minded as we can for that. If it is cosmological in its point of view, we're all about that too. We want to know what you think about the alignment of the Earth with the rift in the Milky Way, and, of course, the Sun and some of the other planets aligned on the other side. At this one moment, when the precession hand clicks past the change between Aquarius and Pisces, from Pisces to Aquarius. This is the aging of the Earth, one zodiacal sign at a time. When we look at the universe and we look at time, we have a tendency to have an individual viewpoint of it. I can tell you right now, there are 7 billion people on the Earth, and there are 7 billion realities with respect to time. Some of us think life is going way too fast, and we're just not getting anything done. Others are able to slow time down a little bit and savor each moment. Every single kiss, every single walk on the beach, every single phone conversation, every childbirth, every single birthday, every single sunrise is an absolute treasure of time, soaked in and slowed down one frame at a time and savored with the existence of mortality. Others look at time as something to be raced against. And as the song says, to race around, to come up behind you again. We find ourselves entering the job market in our 20s, blinking, and we're in our 30s, blinking again, and we're in our 50s, wondering how in the world we missed our career that we had planned on. That's okay, though. That's okay. Retirement's coming up. I'll get it all together by retirement. I've got these great plans, beaches, golf, everything's going to work out wonderfully. And the next thing you know, you're dead. 4-7 billion realities with respect to time. But the truth is that we're all made of particles. And many of those particles were formed in supernova events and were entangled, one with another, one with the earth with the cosmos. And the cosmos is bathing us with energy. Are we listening? The Maya left us a message. Somebody asked me one time, well, don't you think 2013 is just going to be like 2012? I mean, we're just going to breeze through this just like we did Y2K. It's just a big hype. It's just a big thing to make money and to get everybody all excited. Well, there are some major differences between Y2K and 2012. Y2K was a perceived cataclysm or catastrophe that was going to happen because computer chips couldn't make the shift to a 2 instead of a 1 as the first digit in the date. Well, the accountants went crazy. The federal government got behind it and issued billions of dollars worth of grants to assure everyone was Y2K compliant. And sure enough, in 2001, everything was just as it was in 1999. So it was sort of like crying wolf. The electrical sky, the digital sky is going to fall in the year 2000. It didn't happen. So are people a little benumbed by it? Are they a little sensitized to it now, or are they habituated to it? Are they hypersensitive to these megalithic statements that one great change is going to happen and a big rock is going to fall out of the sky? Or are they sensitized to it? Yeah. Same sale, same mall. Same news network, same news anchor. Blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a big difference, because the Maya spent generations of people hacking cities out of the jungle, building things out of lava stone and granite, and with mortar and advanced engineering techniques year after year after year. Not for them. Not for them. They didn't use these as houses. They didn't use these for anything other than to align their cities with the stars for a certain date. And they created a calendar called the Mayan calendar using very, very complex mathematical wheels called the Tzolk'in wheels. These are interactive wheels that, when operated by the likes of Abraham, for instance, it's believed that maybe even Abraham invented the Tzolk'in wheels, but it's almost universally accepted that he used the Tzolk'in wheels. But these wheels, when manipulated by one with skill, definitely told time in multiple dimensions. Why was it important to tell time in multiple dimensions? Because you could tell the future using these wheels, and you could see what happened in the past. This was the tool of prophets. Now, one might say, well, how can you do that with mathematics? It is possible, because I can't go into all the theory behind it, but here's the gist of it. Time exists no more than the Big Bang exists. Yeah, I know that's a broad statement, but let me just divide it up a little bit for you. You remember Einstein used to theoretically put himself in a spaceship, and he used to fly right beside a photon, and he used to look at the photon and realize what were the properties of that photon at the speed of light. And what he realized is that the speed of light was the maximum speed that could be achieved in the universe, and everything was relative to that. With minor things to do with special relativity and other dimensions and even folding space, the actual speed through space cannot exceed the speed of light. And that changed everything. And it wasn't well received right away by the general physics community, but they could not disprove it. And that's the one thing that opens the eyes of the scientific community. But let's take this one step further. Let's jump out of Einstein's spacecraft and let's be the photon. Just be the photon for a moment. Yes, there you go. Now let's say that your photon was generated by the fusion of two hydrogen protons into helium on the star Arcturus, which is very bright in the sky. And we here on Earth are the observers, and we look up in the sky and we say, oh, there's Arcturus right over there. In our minds, that photon jumped out into existence from the fall of one electron from one shell to another shell, and boom, this photon goes radiating out into space, travels in a straight line, bending here and there due to gravitational fields on its way, all the way, light year after light year, to Earth, and finally to my eye when I look up and see this wonderful star. That's our perception of it. That's our perception of it. But from the perception of the photon, it has quite a different view, my friends. Because if the speed of light is the maximum speed in the universe, and time becomes zero, then distance becomes zero. Okay? Distance becomes zero. You know what the formula, E equals MC squared, right? What is the C? It's on the quiz later at the end of the program. 530-413-4511. What does the C represent in E is equal to MC squared? Okay, time's up. C represents the constant, the speed of light. In miles, it's 186,000 miles per second. In meters, it's 300,000 meters per second. So, think about this for a second. We're not talking about one number. We're talking about two numbers. We're talking about a fraction, are we not? A fraction. So if time becomes zero, the fraction of the distance becomes zero. If you divide by zero, you get zero. So if distance becomes zero, that means that the entire universe is a singularity from the photon's point of view. It's all now. All the past and all the future and the present are all one to the photon. There is no time and there is no distance. What this means is there never was a Big Bang. There never was a Big Bang. It's only we, the human being, that is able to slow the universe down to time. We do it. All 7 billion of us create our own reality. If you don't believe me, ask anyone, your own kids if you want, your own school teacher, your own spouse, your own lover, your own coworker, ask them what they think reality is, and it will be different than yours. It's that way if you had the time, no pun intended, to ask every single being on the planet, you would get a different answer. There is no Big Bang. It is all the joint and average creation of us. We are the creators of this universe. It is all really just a singularity. Just ask the photon mathematically and you will see the answer. So when we ask the question, why weren't the Maya able to hang around to tell us what was going to happen? And where did they go? And why did they leave? And better yet, how did they leave? It brings us to the next question. Are they coming back before that day? Or are they really satisfied that they left us everything we need to know with what they built? Really good things to think about. 530-413-4511, anywhere, on planet or off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us. So the creation of this reality, moment by moment, in a sea, a foam, a mathematical cauldron of realities on this planet and other planets, is what makes the universe what it is. The universe is the result of the average consciousness of every being in it, you included. And whether you're listening to this program live and not calling in, shame on you, or whether you're listening to this at your favorite workstation on Monday or the next week, these are great questions for you to consider. And there's no need to get wrapped up into the culture of it, or the tradition of it, or this being, or that being, or this prophet, or that prophet. Let's forget about all that. Just look at it from the soul of your being. Not to say that these prophets didn't have important things to say. Certainly Enoch was one of the ones that had great insight into this and understood certainly what was going on, although it didn't have a really popular way of telling us what he saw. His books, although quoted many hundreds of times in the Old and New Testaments, are not included in the Old and New Testaments, and only a portion of his writing is included in publications like the Book of Mormon, for instance, in the Book of Ether. These are the writings or at least the interpretations and remembrance of the writings of the Book of Enoch. So when we think about these things, and you ask these questions, you really get a profound feeling, do you not? So the next question is, why the Mayans? I mean, what did they know about what was going to happen to us? Well, you can look at it in the stone. They had the idea that, of course, the Earth is going to line up with the womb of the Milky Way, this dark rift in the galaxy that you see when you look up at night. And this ostensibly is a very, very powerful gravitational plane of force that the Earth is about to pass through. And certainly around this plane, there's a halo of energy, which is at a different frequency and different energy levels, different electron volts, than what we're used to. What we've seen over the last 2,600 years. Now, when you consider that, and you see the changes that are occurring in the human race and with the human consciousness, then one has to think that the Earth is being bathed in a new energy. Now, there are those of you that are very sensitive to this and have ideas on this. Please call in and share what you have. Is it the equivalent of the Spirit of God? Is it a vibration that affects the very DNA, the very genetics, the very protein processes that occur in the human body? Several hundred proteins used to build the human body. Each protein built by a gene. We realize we don't have enough genes to make all the proteins in the human body. Therefore, each gene has a range of proteins that it can choose from to make the human body. Gee, I used a word like choose, didn't I? Well, that's kind of interesting, because that would mean that the gene would have either some input to the choice, or it would have the ability, the sentience, to choose for itself. Well, let's just take the first one. If it had some input to make the choice, that would be, according to Bruce Lipton, that would be the environment. That would be what we eat. That would be what we drink. That would be whether we live under power lines or not, whether we live near the equator or near the North Pole, whether we live in the mountains or close to the beach, whether we consume a lot of salt in our diet. In fact, and this is really, really amazing, we were talking to Leonid Sharashkin the other day on the program. If you missed that, it was, I believe, the first Sunday of December. The interesting thing that he was talking about was how people would plant seeds, according to this tradition that was written in the Anastasia series, into their mouth. And for a few minutes, they would let the seed soak up the saliva of the person who was going to plant it. Now, you know, for those of you that have ever been swabbed for DNA, this is how it's done. You put a cotton swab in the mouth, you wipe the mouth, you get the DNA, and you make the genetic analysis. The seed is evidently doing the same thing. It's taking a DNA sample of the person that's going to plant the seed. And then you put the seed in the ground, and the plant grows using the knowledge that it gained from the DNA of the person who planted it. And so the plant knows, or it's at least in the genetics of the plant, it knows to create nutrition that body that soaked it in its mouth before it put it in the ground needs. This is what birds do. This is what animals do. They consume food, and the seeds pass through the animal, gathering information from the DNA. The seed goes into the ground, grows, and makes a plant that sustains the wildlife. Humans are the only ones, the only animals on the face of the earth that get their food from everywhere. We get cabbage from Southern California. We get bananas from Mexico. We get coconuts from the southern places in the Caribbean. We get our meat from Montana. People that live in Japan get their meat from Australia, for crying out loud. What happens is the minerals that are used to grow the plants, to feed the livestock and make the protein, are not from the area that the being is actually living in. And so what do you think would be the result? How about a decrease in health? How about an increase in allergies? People allergic to food that they eat. What a crazy thing to have to survive. That's just really interesting, isn't it? So, as it turns out, the Russian people get about 60% of their fresh produce from home gardens, and the seeds are grown in this way. Unfortunately, there's no longevity data to back it up, because to go along with this, the Russians are very, very high consumers of alcohol. And it isn't very clean alcohol. It's vodka. And some of it is fermented in the most impure fashion, which results in all kinds of diseases that have to do with alcoholism. But the point is that we become entangled with our planet, and the planet is entangled with the cosmos, and the energy that's pouring over the planet and the minerals that make up the planet, thus making up the tissues of our body, are also being affected. So these energies are affecting our bodies directly and indirectly, and the genes that are used to make the proteins for our bodies, which then lose their elasticity in their skin, which then lose the flexibility, lose the ability to maintain density of bones and whatever, are a result of the total environment that we place the body into. And that includes our consciousness. We'll take a 4-minute and 30-second break, let people get something to drink and make other necessary adjustments to their seating position. Please keep your tray in its upright and locked position. Loosen your seatbelt a little bit. Lean your seat back, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes and 30 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Don't forget, Earth Explorers, as you put together your Christmas lists this year, you're wondering what to get that special someone, go to ArcOfMillionsOfYears.com. Take a quick moment, shouldn't take you more than about a minute or two, and get the trilogy on the way to that someone that you love. Get them on the path of thinking about the immediate future, what's going to happen in the next 3 years, and how they can participate and how they can prepare. It's ArcOfMillionsOfYears.com. That's A-R-K, like a Noah's Ark. ArcOfMillionsOfYears.com. And click on the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy, and make sure to select the shipping solution for your area. We ship a lot of books to New Zealand and Australia, and also to Europe and Canada, and many, many to the United States as well. If you buy the trilogy, you will get the first two books in audio form for free. It will come to you in the PayPal receipt. So take those links, download them to your computer or your iPod, and you can listen to the books at your leisure. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you. The third book is not recorded yet. We're still working on it. Been quite busy doing other things, which leads me to the next thing. The first truck, the first electric truck, rolled off the assembly line today in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Won't be long now. The plant, the vehicle will be going through a crash testing with the federal government as soon as it comes out of that. Next year, early or mid, production will begin and jobs will begin flowing again for the first time in 15 years in Eastern Kentucky, and we're happy to be part of it. Don't go away. 40 seconds. We'll be back. I'm Brooks Agnew. This is X Squared Radio. All is quiet in Eastern Kentucky. Our AccuWindow forecast, about 31 degrees outside. Skies partly cloudy. Lots of snow still on the ground. The East and Midwest getting hammered the last week by snowstorms. Slowed everything down, even moviegoers. By the way, one question we want to ask tonight, have you seen the movie Avatar? And have you seen it in 3D or the regular version? I can tell you, if you haven't seen it in 3D, make the drive. See the movie in three dimensions. Wow. What a movie, what a movie. I don't care about the movie, the monetary records. This movie really, really was a John Cameron movie. If you enjoyed the passion and the deep love theme in The Abyss, you are going to love this movie. All right, let's get back to the question we had. Why the Mayans? Why? What did they know about what was going to happen to us, and how did they learn it? Really good questions. Because if they were just kind of hanging around the jungle, smoking whatever local organics might have been available in the area, better living through chemicals, I always say, were they just envisioning a future? Was this enough to motivate a race of engineers, of people who were hacking out of the jungle granite stones and stacking them with precision that sets the whole world in awe? Or were they taught by someone? Did they learn it from the peoples of the earth? There is evidence in Bolivia that somebody who knew how to write Sumerian visited these people. If you look at the Fuente Bowl, you will see that it is covered in Sumerian writing. Well, people, Earth explorers, come on. Either the Sumerians visited Bolivia about 22,000 years after they lived in the East, or Somebody who taught the Sumerians also taught the people of Bolivia, or the people from Bolivia traveled to Sumeria and dug up that artifact and brought it back. Not very likely. In fact, if we use Occam's razor on this, it's almost assured that they had a common teacher, the Sumerians and the ancients who lived in Bolivia. Interesting, interesting. So if they had the same teacher, and they were teaching the same ancient language, a very precise trade language of Sumerian, it really opens the door to the idea that somebody was a traveling teacher that was timeless. Somebody visited these peoples. Now, the Maya claim that it was Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl was, oh my gosh, under so many names, so many legends. He was the bearded white god that Cortez was expected to be the likeness of. He was the creator. He was the teacher. He was the healer. He was the center of the guidance that they had in the area, the feathered serpent, Quetzalcoatl. You also see, if you go to the Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City, that there were as many as 12 and maybe even 200 beings that came and taught these people. And if you look at these beings standing next to the Maya, it's the difference of a 9 or 10 foot person standing next to a Mayan person. Were they real or were they perceived? Well, that's a good question. If you look at the Pakal tomb, you see that Pakal himself was about 7 feet tall. Oh, one more thing. Pakal had 6 toes on each foot. Mm-hmm. You know what that is? That is a genetic remnant of the giants, which were offspring from the Nephilim. So, did they learn it from peoples of the earth, or did they learn it from the Nephilim, or even alien visitors? People that are not from here. You know, we don't really have the remnants of a people on this earth that have lived for 20 or 30 or 40,000 years in a single generation. But these are good questions. Let's see what Bob from Salem has to say. Bob, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. Talking about the Mayans and where they might have gone to.
Yes.
I think they might have evolved into a different dimension. A higher dimension. That's what I believe.
That's a good point. They talk openly about that. We would call it a fifth dimension.
That's right. That's what I think was the fifth dimension.
That's interesting. So they would have to have, if we look at the mathematics of dimensions, the fourth dimension being time, and the fifth dimension being one of a rotational energy or a rotational dimension around superstring theory. If they were able to master this, they wouldn't be visible by us at all.
That's right. They would probably still be in the area, but with the, their higher consciousness, you know, would just put them in a different dimension, like the fifth dimension.
Do you think it's possible for people in our dimension to access those wiser beings?
I think so, yes.
You know, I hear people talk about their higher selves or their spirit guides or their guides. And many times in speaking to people, some of these guides have a Maya look to them. They have that hooked nose. They have the dark skin, the black hair, and even a musical way of speaking. It could be. You might be right.
It was just a thought, you know, that I've been thinking about that since we've been talking about the 2012 and the Mayans and their calendar and their engineering. So I was thinking that they're just so advanced, not only politically, but religiously.
Well, I think you're for some technology exchange with them, don't you?
What's that?
I think we're ready for some technology exchange with them, don't you?
Probably. Yeah, they've done things that we haven't been able to do yet.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out how not to sell our grandchildren's inheritance, which we're doing a dandy job of.
I know.
The Maya had a much longer term view of things.
I try not to let that bother me. It seems so hopeless with the government. They're going to do what they want to do, and that's it. And you see more of it every day. You know,
that's true. You know, what we hope the government will realize is that they serve at the mercy of us. If we would just organize and do what we, the people, are supposed to do, they wouldn't have the power that they have.
That's right. But I think people are too busy with their TV and sports and whatever.
Well, that's true. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
We get too tied up in the third dimension of racing from one event to another and not really paying attention to the purpose of life.
That's right.
You get wrapped up
exactly.
in it. Well, I so appreciate you listening to X Squared Radio.
I listen every Sunday.
You're a first time caller. Have you been listening long?
Oh yeah, for a few years. In fact, I had a subscription from you for I don't know how many years, 3 or 4 years, on going through the archives.
Oh,
but
great!
Now
that's wonderful.
To listen to every Sunday night.
Well, this is sort of a theme that we're talking about tonight because of the date, December 20th, and tomorrow's the 21st. We really have 3 years to the day
today to
really give this
some
powerful attention. What are your preparations for the next 3 years?
Well, for the last, let's see, this is 2009, for the last 8 years I've had food prepared. I don't know. I feel that the Earth is going through an ascension. The Earth itself will be going through an ascension into another dimension. And all I can do is save food and water and tell my friends and my family. Of course, most of my family think I'm crazy anyway.
Well, I wouldn't worry about that at all. As I said,
I don't let it worry me at all. In fact, I have one daughter.
Seven billion realities out there, and Bob's got one of his own, and I like it.
Oh yeah, I had one daughter that came up to me. Well, she sent me an email. She lives out of town, and she sent me an email saying that, "Well, hey, Dad, see, a lot of things you've been saying. This, I guess you were right." They didn't believe me, you know, but one of them was beginning to see that I was right, all the things that were going to happen.
Well, I think so, New Hampshire's one of those safe areas, you know. You're kind of on higher ground. You're well away from the oceans.
Well,
and you've got.
I'm not too far from the ocean. I'm only 30 miles from the ocean.
30 miles. So, how high?
But I have my camp up further up country. Near the foothills of the White Mountains.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's beautiful country up there. You've gotten a lot of snow the last week.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have up there. We had it over here today. We had only about 4 or 5 inches today. But the mid-Atlantic states, I guess, got hit pretty hard. Washington, D.C., Delaware, you know, Virginia. They got hit pretty hard.
Yeah, we got some in eastern Kentucky here. We got about 4 inches, and it snowed a little bit more today. So some people here got the white Christmas they were asking for, and that's good.
Yeah, me makes no difference, Christmas, white or not. Makes no difference.
Well, so the Maya went into another dimension. And
that's what I feel.
And they left behind these tremendous...
They just left everything,
cities.
Yeah.
Which were easily swallowed up by the jungle. I mean, just in a few years, they were buried. And then in the late 1800s, they started hacking them out of the jungle. And fortunately, I really think fortunately, Mexico did not do to them what Egypt did to theirs. You know, Egypt stripped them,
Egypt,
you know, right into the sandstone.
Yeah.
And Egypt makes a franchise out of them and tells the world that they were actually the ones that built it, as if anyone believes it.
Yeah, I don't believe they built the pyramids. I'm talking about the Egyptians.
Right. So have you been to any of the cities in Mexico and actually seen some of these for yourself?
No, I've never been down there. I just read about it now and then.
Yeah. Well, you should maybe plan a trip down there. It's.
I remember reading about Edgar Casey one time. He mentioned that he levitated the stones onto the for the pyramids.
Uh-huh.
Of course,
seems like the only way it could have been done. If you look at those stones, you say there's no crane. No crane in the world could have lifted those stones into place.
No, physically do it. But who can say he's wrong, because the mind is a powerful thing.
It really is, and everywhere where you go in Egypt, you do not see a single drawing of anybody with their hands under a stone lifting it. You see lots of drawings of people with their hands over the stones lifting them.
Yep, that's right. It's quite interesting, I'll tell you. I'm anxious to find out more, getting more information on what's under the Sphinx, you know. And, of course, you had a guest one night, I think it was you, that was talking about excavating next to the pyramid.
Yep, we had Robert Balval on the program. I wrote the book The Egypt Code. Really, really great thinker. If you go there and you walk around the Sphinx, it's pretty well excavated. I mean, you see where they had to dig this thing out of the ground. Yeah. And then you have Robert Temple, who makes the case that the Sphinx wasn't a man at all. And it isn't a lion's body, and it really isn't. If you look at the anatomical features of it, it is clearly the body of a dog. And Robert maintains that the head was not that of a man originally. It was the head of Anubis. And it was recarved into the head of a man.
By the Egyptians, maybe?
Sure, by one of the pharaohs that discovered it and say, gee, that looks nice, but why Anubis? Why not me? I'm better looking than him.
You're right.
Carved there in his likeness.
Yeah, never thought of that.
Well, some great things.
Did I see in your book, you were standing in one of the pyramids?
Yes, I've been there.
I read all your three books.
Oh, I appreciate that so much. That's probably why your family thinks you're crazy.
What's that?
That's probably why your family thinks you're a little off your rocker, because you read my books.
No, they started thinking I was crazy even before I read your books. I just got crazy.
Well, good. I'm safe. I don't get the blame.
Well, it was nice talking to you, Brooks.
Oh, same here, Bob. And you can call back anytime.
So
wonderful to have you on the program.
One of these days, I said, I got to call in. Some of your guests are so fascinating. There's one guest that I didn't agree with at all, that you had one night. And I bought his book. I found him as a guest very interesting. So I bought his book, and right away it turned me off. After I read just the foreword and the introduction, it kind of turned me off. And I wrote him an email about it. And I criticized a part of the book. And he countered it. And then I wrote back to him and I explained why I thought the way I did. This was a... Well, I can't remember his name. I got his book around someplace, but I don't know where it is.
What was the subject?
Well, anyway, so I emailed him again. I discussed why I felt the way I did, why I reasoned the way I did. And I hoped to hear from him some more so we can discuss it some more, but he never returned my call, my email. So I guess he didn't like what I said.
Well, I always appreciate the feedback that I get from people.
I think we were talking about, ETs. I think he's the one who said that all ETs are basically evil. I think that's
okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then he started quoting a lot of areas in the Bible, you know? So I
remember that. I do remember that. It was turned out to be not really like so much his book, but because I read the books, and then I put together the questions, and when I bring the guest on, they often go a little bit left or right of their book. I mean, usually it's pretty fascinating, but every once in a while, you get somebody who goes rather evangelical in the middle of their speaking that wasn't in the book and wasn't, you know, in the material that we receive. And it's kind of interesting to see that, too. But I don't see, at least in my opinion, a conflict between divinity, or at least divine writings, religious writings, spiritual writings, and the idea that there are other races out there in the cosmos that may be visiting or have visited Earth. I just don't see a conflict there. Do you?
No, absolutely not. I think that they may be more spiritual than we are, because I'm talking about the benevolent ETs. I think they get a higher spirituality than we have, because I don't know when their last wars were. I guess they've had wars, you know, through the millions of years, I guess. But they formed the Galactic Federation, and to live in peace. Of course, some of them didn't, but the bulk of them, especially in our galaxy, formed that Galactic Federation. And I just find it fascinating reading about it.
Well, you know, there's an age-old saying that says, if you live by the sword,
you'll die by the sword.
That's correct. And so peace seems to be the only long-term supporting energy of a race. If you're going to live for millions of years as a race, and you're going to proliferate and go out into the universe, to do so on a war footing will most assuredly design your extinction.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The secret is all in love, just plain love.
That's exactly right. And that's where we're going in our third hour. So I appreciate the phone call, Bob. We're going to leave the phone lines open, and you can call back any time.
Okay, Brooks.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Same to you. Good night.
Good night. All right, Earth Explorers, the point is that Bob brings to it is that there are multiple dimensions of existence. And it's quite possible that the Maya accessed a higher dimension as a people. They figured out how to go through it, and they went through it as a choice, either to get away from a cataclysm that was getting ready to occur here on Earth, or to get away from the warlike nature of the races on this planet. By the way, I do want to ask the question, any of those people out there that saw the movie Avatar? Avatar is a great movie on several different levels. I don't want to spoil it for you at all. And I would ask that when you call in here, just tell me the favorite part about the movie that you like. We'll talk about it in such a manner that those that haven't seen it will greatly desire to go see it. But it has it has a lot of the things that we've been talking about here tonight on it. And it was just a very, very fulfilling and a typically John Cameron, very, very intense love between two people and two peoples, actually. and this is the way John Cameron weaves this theme. Those of you that saw The Abyss saw the tremendous respect and love that that the two stars had for one another. In fact, twice in the same movie, one of the partners died for the other, and then the other turned around and died for the other. Just incredible power, incredible power. So let us know what you think. Scott, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. I just wanted to share some of the stuff about the Mayan that I know. I've recently, well, within the last year, got How to Practice Mayan Astrology by Bruce Schofield. It's pretty easily found in Barnes & Noble. And then I've been using off and on the Mayan Oracle for about 14 years.
Wow.
And that's a card deck that has the star glyphs. So from looking at the star glyphs, yes, it looks like they were rather cosmic and possibly did go into another dimension. When reading the interpretations of the glyphs, there are, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20 different glyphs, and they have 13 numbers, and each number has its own meaning. And then they have the lenses. There are 11 of those, language of light, shadow, resolution of duality, adventurer's quest, realm shift, hologram, portal of transcendence, transparency, dreamer and dreamed, the new myth, and transformer. Those are the lenses.
Wow.
And the numbers, as I was saying, they each have like a different meaning. And when I'm doing a reading for myself, I'll turn the cards over and use a pendulum and have the pendulum direct me to the message that I need right then and there that reflects what I need to hear at that given point in time. And I find that works well for me. In reading, I haven't read the Mayan astrology in its entirety, and it's very intricate. I know Western astrology rather well, and then there's Vedic astrology, which is a little different than Western in that the Vedics have the signs closer to where probably Edgar Cayce would say they are in terms of being about a sign off from where the Western signs are. And then here comes the Mayan with the, you know, with the 13 different signs. And like I say, it's intricate stuff, and I've yet to, like, be able to cast a chart. It'd be easier if I could find a computer program that would do this. But they have their own ephemeris in the book, and from just the general sense of it, it's kind of like the Mayans, there's a lot of hardship in the interpretations, and I begin to wonder if they felt like living on Earth was just too difficult, and why don't, you know, isn't it easier to go somewhere else, and then they left. That's just kind of the general sense of looking at the Mayan astrology and then looking at the cosmic nature of it all, that's possibly, you know, putting one with the other, that maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
Well, you know, when you look at that area, you have great geotechnic activity. You had volcanoes, you got earthquakes, you got hurricanes that pound the area every year. You have a jungle that unceasingly tries to take over the area. If you've ever been to Teotihuacan, you can easily climb the Temple of the Moon unless you're a smoker. It's about 8,000 feet, and this thing climbs at about 45 degrees, something like 280 steps or something. But you climb up to the top of this thing and sit and try to get the lungs back into your chest. And you look out over the city, you'll see the buildings that are on the Avenue of the Dead are pretty well exhumed. But if you look to the west, you'll see dozens and dozens and dozens of smaller buildings that look like mounds of dirt with weeds growing on them. And that's because the dust settles on top of these buildings, seeds drop into it, form roots, gather more dirt, and literally literally within 10 years, these buildings look like hills again. So you can imagine what they look like after 450 or 1,000 years of non-attentiveness. They're just completely swallowed up by the jungle. So you literally have to beat the jungle back with a broom and a machete. So it probably was tough. It was probably very labor-intensive. But look what they created out of it, out of granite, these huge, amazing, super well-aligned temples. And this did not come easy. They didn't have advanced tools. They didn't have cranes. They didn't have earth-moving equipment. This was a major, major undertaking for them for a reason. These aren't mud and grass huts. These are timeless edifices that were designed to withstand everything the earth had to dish out and survive until now.
And the date on the temples, is there any idea how far back they date them?
That's a really good question. If you go to Teotihuacan, the story is that the Maya were driven inland from the coast from terrible tempests and earthquakes and maybe even war. They migrated as a people, and as they came down out of the mountains and across the valley, this city was sitting there, already built. All the plumbing, all the bathhouses, all the pristine white pyramids were laying there, all coated with a beautiful, beautiful alabaster. And it was just sitting there for them. So they took it over, and they lived in it for hundreds of years. But that city didn't have a single piece of artwork, not a single shard of pottery, not a single arrow point in it. It was as though someone built it and left it after they got it finished.
I've always wondered if, you know, the Mayan, the Egyptians, that, you know, once Atlantis went down the last time, that people went in different directions, and some went east, some went west, some went northwest, northeast, whatever, southeast, southwest, and possibly ended up there and started a new civilization.
Sure. You know, if you look at Neil Adams' work on the Earth and the fact that it was once one-third its present size, and that maybe shortly after it began this expansion process to the size that it is now, there were civilizations living on it. So as the oceans formed, as the continents split open and the ocean floor was formed and the sea filled it in and receded away from the mountains, it had to be quite cataclysmic. I mean, everything changed. You went from being a mountain people to a valley people in, you know, a few hundred thousand years, or maybe even a few million years. This is the kind of thing that divides the people up to where they just don't have any roots anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Brooks. I just wanted to throw those things in. The Mayan Oracle, that's by, Spilsbury and Briner, and that's a deck, a divination deck. Like I said, I've been working with this one off and on for about 13, 14 years. And then the astrology, I just picked that one up trying to figure out how to make sense of it all.
Spilsbury and Briner, is it B-R-I-N-E-R?
B-R-Y-N-E-R. And Bruce Schofield, S-C-O-F-I-E-L-D, for how to practice Mayan astrology.
I'm going to look up Bruce and see if I can get him to come on the program. I'm going to pick up a set of those Mayan Oracle cards. I've got Phoenix cards. I've got, different kinds of cards. Most of them are built on the pattern of 78 and use a very similar divination pattern. It's mathematical in nature. I have found the Tao Te Ching, the I Ching, to be very, very accurate. I've tried it many times. It's about 4,000 years old. It is mathematics actually influenced step by step by the subconscious, which I like better than shuffling and handling the cards. But it's pretty interesting how it works. I'm pretty impressed by it. So this stuff had some kind of of validity to it. You know, even in the Book of Mormon, they had a device called the Liahona, which was a brass instrument that was left at the doorstep of the tent of these Bedouins that had left Jerusalem and traveled out into the desert. And in order to make it work, you had to use your consciousness. When you had a higher consciousness, then the brass needles would move and there would be text would show up in the little window and tell you where to go to find food and water and what direction to go into to survive. That if your consciousness dropped and you fell into evil or jealousy or malice or violence, it quit working. What an amazing instrument. It's kind of like my car. You know, it works until I get mad at it, then it doesn't work so well, then I have to talk nice to it again, and then, you know, it gets me where I want to go and lasts forever. And if someone else buys the car, it immediately breaks down.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you so much for the call. Have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Bye.
Good night. All right, so we have some amazing input out there. The wheels are turning. And I like the insight. The Mayans spent so much time and so much energy. And I've got to tell you, there's not too much trial and error out there in the Mayan community. It's not like you go to Egypt and you see the Great Pyramid, and then you go look at Saqqara, and you look at some of these other pyramids, and you go, you know, it looked like somebody was trying to make a pyramid there, and they kind of almost made it, but didn't realize that the weight, you know, would crush the foundation. And some of these pyramids, like Saqqara, are made out of rubble. I mean, come on, you go look at it for yourself. Just walk up to it and look at it, and you go, this isn't the same pyramid as that. This isn't even on the same class and scope as that. This is a pile of rocks compared to the Great Pyramid. And then you have the Egyptian government telling you, well, Saqqara was the oldest. Yes, Saqqara was built, and then they finally got it right, and they built the Great Pyramid. Rubbish. Rubbish, people. It's the difference between a... it's the difference between a wonderful, gorgeous painting by a master like Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci or Gauguin or Renoir and a child's finger painting. There is no comparison between the technique, the scope, the engineering, the fit, the finish. There's no comparison whatsoever. Looking at Saqqara, you clearly see the difference in communication between the guy who had the idea, who may or may not have lived to see it, the guy who took the idea and went to his engineers and said, go get me this style block, and I know he wants 100, get me 300 of them, okay? And make them this long instead of that long. I know what he wants. By the time the thing is built, it looks just like what it looks like. It's a jumbled mishmash of the worst kind of bricklaying you ever saw. But when you look at the Great Pyramid, you have to look at it and say, now, wait a minute. Just wait a minute. This is the result of a standardized measurement system. This is the result of a communication system that worked perfectly from the source of the construction, the origin of the construction, to the source of the stone 300 miles to the north in Aswan, to 600 miles to the south in Sudan. These stones came from almost 1,000 miles apart together to one spot, and they fit like a glove. People, I have internet. I got AutoCAD. I can't get parts to fit from 50 miles away, let alone 300 miles away. And I got a cell phone. I can talk to the guy on the phone and say, no, make it an inch shorter, make it an inch longer. This is stone hauled days, weeks, months from their point of quarry to the point of use. And there's no junk on the side. There's no stones that were, oh, gee, this one doesn't, go toss it in the river, will you? There are no stones in the river from Aswan all the way to Cairo. In the Nile River, there are no stones laying on the bottom of the river that fell off of barges. Okay? The evidence isn't there. What we're saying is somewhere in the ancient part of this world, there was a very, very high order of engineering going on. And it was laid down not by trial and error. It was laid down under the direction of intelligence and engineering that was none other than off-world. So perhaps they knew that Earth was going through a transition, a sort of energy bath that would cause the human race to quicken its evolution. Do you see that the peoples of Earth are going through an evolution right now? Do you see that? When you travel, when you move out of your neighborhood, when you watch things on television, do you see that the peoples of Earth are beginning to go through this evolution? Of course, no two people go through it alike. Some, like Bob in New Hampshire, or Scott, are getting it. They're seeing these higher energies at work. They're going out on their own, and they're getting the information, and they're reading it, and they're enlightening, and they're changing the environment of their body because their consciousness is changing. And as their consciousness changes, the genes in their body select a completely different set of proteins to build the biological transducer that makes the body. And just like putting the seeds in your mouth for the seeds to gain information from your DNA so that they could grow and nourish you, particularly the way nature has been doing it for millions of years with animals, your body is now drawing from consciousness the energy that it needs, the information it needs from that energy to make the genetics to accept this evolution and to even cause this evolution. It has been reported that children being born today have a 10% larger cerebrum than children of the 1930s. Why do you think this is? And do you really think that we demand more from our brains than ever before? And here's a great question, and this is one of the reasons why it stimulates you when you go and watch this movie Avatar. Do you think that the children of today are smarter than the children of days past? Or do you think that the internet has become the new neural network that enhances the data library of human consciousness? People, Earth explorers, when we used to wonder about something when we were young, there was only one place to go. That was the library. And I grew up in Los Angeles area. Actually, I grew up in Pasadena. I can tell you, the Pasadena Library, the San Marino Library, was good. It was very good. It was as good as any library around. But it didn't have everything. It had a lot of old stuff. And I got to tell you, Caltech is a great place to hang around. JPL, co-oping for JPL is awesome. It's wonderful. You don't get to see everything, but you get to see some things that really stimulate your mind. You get to work with people who are really, really looking out there on the edge of science, as far as the government will let them go. But it's not the same as the internet. The internet in 1996 finally became accessible to most households. But even in 1996, most people accessed the internet through dial-up. Dial-up. I mean, come on. That's like praying to God with two soup cans and a string. It's not effective. Trying to manipulate or to negotiate one's email using dial-up is an exercise in frustration close to having a coronary. We're used to high-speed internet. And, you know, you can have 6 megabytes, 10 megabytes, 20 megabytes. I knew a guy that had a 1 gig connection to the net. And I can tell you, if you're sitting out there with a 10 meg bandwidth and you're accessing the internet, your brain, your mouse finger is still going faster than the internet. The internet has become the new neural network for the human brain. We don't have to go to the library anymore. We don't have to get out of our pajamas anymore. If we have a question, we can find the answer from 10 different viewpoints. Pull it together, assimilate it, found it, forge it into our consciousness, and move on to the next concept. We, people, Earth explorers, are moving through faith to direct knowledge. And as we usurp faith with knowledge, we don't give up faith. We use faith, we stand on the knowledge, and we reach even further. And there's no limit. Because what happens when we reach the limit of what's known on the internet, and we will, because it's only what has been created, what will be created, is up to you. You're the ones that use the existing information that you're gaining from the internet, and you sit down at your bench and go to the next level of technology, or the next level of understanding, or the next level of musical expression. And your cerebrum continues to grow in order to process that extra neural network that's built. If you had the chance to see the movie Avatar this weekend, why don't you give us a call? You might notice John Cameron's treatment of this very concept in the movie. A people that is electrically connected to a living planet expresses such tremendous love, passion, and reverence for the abundance all around them. If you had a chance to see the movie, give us a call. If you haven't had a chance to see the movie, do it. See this movie. See John Cameron's work called Avatar. It's going to turn a lot of things on for you. And if you haven't seen the movie The Last Mimsy, go rent it. The Last Mimsy. I know it's a corny title, and you might even think it's a kid's film. By the time you finish, you won't feel that way. Two challenges for you. If you want a new family tradition for Christmas Day, instead of sitting around and watching parades, why don't you go find out what's going on at the movie theater? Because they are packed on Christmas Day. Packed! And it's because people go out as families and watch movies, and those two movies, you can rent The Last Mimsy, not from Redbox because it's too old, but you can rent The Last Mimsy and you can go watch Avatar. I recommend 3D, 3D. If you don't have it in 3D, go ahead and watch it anyway. But in 3D, well, you better have your seatbelt fastened because it's a great movie. All right, I have some other questions for you. And the phone lines are still open, 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. Next week, we're going to have one number fits all. Anywhere on the planet, you call that number, and it will search for the best way to get into X Squared Radio. We've got a lot of listeners out there, a lot of people out there listening tonight. This is Christmas week. We're going to have a great, awesome Christmas, and let me tell you, I don't want you to worry about whether you have things for Christmas or not, okay? We, in some areas of the country, are facing unemployment that is beyond what we have seen since 1929. Some areas of the country have higher unemployment than we had in 1929. Don't worry about it. You've got each other. You've got us. I don't want you to worry about it. Don't lose any sleep over it, okay? We will still be here. You will still be here. And we are going to be here next year for you. And I promise, long after you've forgotten about the gift that you're getting this Christmas, after the batteries will no longer bring it to life, you will remember having each other, and you will remember what you heard here tonight. We're getting ready for the third and final hour of X Squared Radio. I want to let you know how much I appreciate you. We've been on this BBS radio network since 2005. We're entering very close our fifth year. And it is the audience, it is the listener, the Earth Explorer that shares the voyages that we make around the planet to try to dig up the deep mysteries of the Earth with you. And we share those with you in the best way that we can. We bring you some of the best guests, some of whom have been interviewed on the programs by professional broadcasters. But they come here, and it's kind of a scientific sanctuary. We can talk about things on levels here that you don't get to hear other places. You're not going to hear it other places. So I appreciate you. I just want you to know, without any reservation and unconditionally. And if you have a chance to share what you've heard here on X Squared Radio and can get other people to come and listen, that's all the better too. Sundays, we're free press, live, around the world. Globally, you can listen to this program live for free. And it will always be that way. My producer, Don Newsom, and I do this out of the love of our heart. We dearly love what we do. For me, this is a hobby. I'm a professional engineer. I do my work with the electric car company and with other companies around the country. I advise, I consult. I have to do that in order to pay for the time to be on the radio. But this is a hobby that I dearly love and I've dreamed of since I was a little boy. And you're part of that dream. You're participating in it with me. And I appreciate you more than you can imagine. And I want you to know that you are really my gift to myself for this program. And if anything that you've heard in this program over the years or tonight has inspired you or has made you a little softer toward your neighbor, a little more passionate toward your lover, a little more appreciative of the stars and the heavens and your existence here on the earth at this time, then my gratitude is full, and I appreciate you so much. I'm going to take about a 4.5-minute break. Please don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this. Unfolding, Lisa Gerard and Peter Bork. Amazing, amazing harmonies. This is the third and final hour of X Squared Radio for December 20th, right before the Christmas season. We appreciate you being here with us tonight. By the way, if you want to know something to get for that special someone, you can always pick up a trilogy of the Ark of Millions of Years. It has a special packaging right now. We have a couple specials for you on that. One is the shipping. If you go to arkofmillionsofyears.com, that's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, arkofmillionsofyears.com, you can order the trilogy and have it shipped directly to you anywhere in the world. Make sure to pick the right shipping option there on the website. But when you buy the trilogy, we will send you the audio version of Volumes 1 and 2 in the PayPal receipt, so you get it immediately. While you're waiting for the books to arrive, you can listen to them. And if you're not a good reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you, and you can listen to them hour by hour on your iPod or your MP3 device or right off your computer if you like. It's going to be a great year. Don't fret. Whether you're unemployed, whether you're not, don't worry about it. They can't kill you. You will survive, and you will be successful. I can promise you this. We'll be back in 40 seconds. The final hour of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew.
The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're bringing it all to you here now. You may loosen your seatbelt, lean your seat back, look out the window. Here we go. We have David from North Idaho on line one. Welcome to the program, David.
Hello, Brooks. Good to hear you.
Oh, it's good to hear from you, my friend. What's the weather like out there in Idaho? Probably cold and windy.
Well, it's not bad. Actually, we've been in the 30s, and we haven't had much snow. We had a little bit of a cold snap there. It was getting down around 6, you know, but we've come back out of that, and it's okay. So at least we're not shoveling too much snow this year.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
I wanted to talk to you about a couple things. One, I recall a story that my mother told me. My mother was born in 1913 and went through the previous depression. And she was working with her sister in a laundry one time. And her sister was a very spiritual person. And was always in touch with a higher plane. And one time at the laundry, she told my mother, don't move, there's an Indian standing behind you. And my mother looked around, and of course she wasn't aware of it. She says, geez, I can't see anything. And she says, well, it's okay. She told me that he is your spiritual guide. And, of course, you know, my mother telling this story, I absolutely believe it, but I was wondering, he had the Indian features and everything, the Oriental features, if that could be, one of the Mayans, possibly.
Well, it very well could be. You know, one of the things that, legend talks about in, remnants of the Maya, is that there are three specific ones. In some writings, they're called the three Nephites, and they're kind of transdimensional beings that show up, times when a car slides off the road in the middle of a blizzard and the person's trapped in the car, and a hand reaches in, grabs their hand, and pulls them to safety.
Yes.
a person to which they owe their survival, and yet there are no footprints in the snow. There's no evidence that they were ever really there. And it's real as real can be. I've also been in Tibet, and I've looked at the Tibetan people and even some of the ancient depictions of the Tibetans, and I see a striking resemblance to American Indians. There have even been blue-eyed Tibetans, which is as rare as a blue-eyed Indian, I guess. So,
well, you know, you've got the Cherokee people who were very genetically related to the so-called Aryan people of Europe, which are different genetically than some of the other tribes. Am I correct on that, or?
I think so. I mean, in our books we studied the Hopi quite a lot because they were more tied to the legends of the earth and its creation. The Cherokee had a very sophisticated government, language system, interstate trade, and even international trade systems, which we envy to this day, and certainly were a threat to the Union Army, which is why they were relocated.
They allied themselves with the Confederates, actually, didn't they?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting that your mother shared this with you. Did she ever share with you that she had any communication with this spirit guide, or that it was just recognized or seen by this other woman who worked at the laundry?
Well, the other woman was her sister. And interestingly, she told another story, which I can't doubt, but where they were sitting in the house, and there was a big oak table there, which was a dining table, and they were they would ask it questions, and her sister was named Allie, and she would say, "Table rise from the opposite end." And this big oak table, these were just girls at this time. And the table would rise up from the opposite end, and they would ask it questions, bow once for yes and twice for no or some such. Maybe the opposite, I'm not sure. But she asked at one time, "Are you from the devil or are you from the Lord?" And it didn't tell anything. And Allie asked my mother, Zila, to put the Bible on the table. This table threw the Bible across the room and turned upside down, and its legs were quivering. Now, this is a story from my mother. I'm not in touch with that kind of realm, at least yet. I absolutely believe her, and Allie, my mother's older sister, was always telling stories where she was in touch with spiritual realms that most of us are not in touch with. But of course, all of those sisters are dead and gone. But I believe she was. She was a very spiritual person and a very simple person. She wasn't really a scientific mind, she didn't really try to analyze it in the way that probably some other people or you would, but I believe she was sincere and truthful.
There's certainly something to be said for irrefutable proof that there is evidence of other realms. Those that have recently passed on, those that are a long time passed on, maybe 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, who are interacting with individuals now. The question is, and I actually asked this question of Gary Schwartz, who was on this program about a year ago, does it always work in family lines? We were talking about John Edwards, and he always seemed to have a knack to access the departed loved ones of people that were in the room. Because this family bond, this love bond between the living and the recently deceased was so strong that he had always been able to access that. And I asked him, is it possible to go beyond that? If we are talking about a people that reincarnate or that exist for thousands and thousands of years, is it possible that, you know, dear old Uncle John was also, you know, Sahib from ancient Egypt,
sure.
Also, you know, Juan Martinez from the Maya. We never got that from John Edwards, and even the other so-called mediums that were working in the same area. And Gary saw it as a great challenge and actually a documentable, quantifiable experiment, which I hope he's conducting right now and soon will bring the results on this program. If we are talking about a being, the human, that does reincarnate and has many, many lifetimes, is it possible to bring back as a spirit guide or as a dearly departed that experience from further lifetimes back?
Well, I believe that. I believe that the soul or the energy that animates the human body is something that is not on this physical realm. I truly believe that.
And timeless.
I think, huh?
And timeless.
Yeah, and timeless, absolutely. Well, like you were saying earlier in the show, if you've got the proton traveling through space, and you look at it from the viewpoint of the proton, there is no time and space because it's all a oneness or a totalitarian effect, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You passed the test. Very good.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
got the answer.
Well, the other thing I kind of just wanted to touch on is the state of Israel. What it's doing now, as far as the horrible things that it's doing on its neighbors and the possibility of a nuclear strike on Iran or whatever. It just seems to me that it's a people that have lost touch with its past. I don't know.
Which one, the Israelis or the Iranians?
The Israelis, yes.
Well, it could be. You know, I can tell you I have acquaintances there, deep loves there, and I can tell you that it is a time of tension. But this
yes.
is a people that is seasoned with this kind of tension. They live with it, and
yes,
they have their traditions and they have their idiosyncrasies, but they are a passionate people and highly educated and highly intelligent, very passionate and very full of love, and they will survive and they will persevere, and I really believe with all my heart that there is a peaceful solution to all of this. And don't believe everything that you read in the news.
Yes, yes. Well, I just look at all the vilification of the German people, which is my heritage, and I know that they went through a terrible, terrible Holocaust, much greater than what is claimed by the Jewish people after the end of the war. And I don't know. I just see that Israel at this time is doing some really, really bad things. I don't know. Maybe it's just my perception, but
I think governments are represented to do bad things. People,
yes, people absolutely, absolutely.
Things.
Governments as a whole are very corruptive. Corruption, kind of a power in the universe right now, or, well, at least on this, not in the universe, but on this world. And I see that it's got to come to an end at some point in time.
Well, we all pray that it will not come to an end violently, that it will come to an end diplomatically, and if the diplomats can't handle it, then the people themselves and their intelligence and their love in their bond for one another will override their governments and refuse to participate in the violence.
I hope to God so. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I'm telling you that I did some very horrible things at the behest of my government, and I was just a young man then, of course, but I have to say that it's something that was not right, and it served no useful purpose to the people of this country, that's for sure. It did serve a useful purpose, I imagine, to somebody on some level, but it certainly wasn't the people of this country, and it wasn't me. And,
right. Well, war never serves anyone. Listen, I appreciate the call. I have someone else hanging on the line.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time, Brooks.
Thank you. Call back anytime, and Merry Christmas to you. Diane from Michigan, you're on line 3. Sorry for the wait.
No problem, Brooks. Really enjoy your show. Been listening to you since I met you at James Gilliland's place in Nacetti last year.
Thank you.
Wanted to call in and let you know that I just saw Avatar a couple hours ago in 3D, and it was absolutely phenomenal.
I thought so. Did you see it in 3D, or did you see it in the
no,
regular?
No, I saw 3D.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I saw 3D, and it had so many messages that I have to go back and see it again and again, because...
I was going to say I was counting my change today to see if I could go back and see it again today. I saw it on Friday night. To say it was unbelievable, to say it was phenomenal, these are ordinary words.
Exactly.
It wasn't just riveting.
I mean, you know, the 3D was great and everything, but it was the message that it sent. And for one of the very first times that I can recall in my going to the theater or watching DVDs or whatever, that I see a people's, and you were just speaking about the government and the violence, and the 99% of the people followed the orders in which to take down this incredible species of people, and the whole theater cheered in the end. I mean, they literally cheered, which gave me just hope that the people of our nation and of the world are coming to see that war and violence in the destruction of innocent people because of the goals of money it was phenomenal. And on top of the fact of the going into multidimensional.
Well, it was. I mean, the concept that we have, that we are somehow connected to our planet, our Gaia, that, you know, we eat her and the bounty of her, and therefore we resonate with her both for good and for ill, is
absolutely
really taken to the next level in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to give it away for everybody, but they must go see it. And you're absolutely right. It needs to be seen in 3D just for the graphics of it that was just phenomenal. And just the whole, the love and the intensity of it was
John Cameron's famous for that. I mean, from The Abyss, it was the most profound scenes in the movie, not only between the husband and the wife, but also between the people and the aliens that were on there. But this movie, the one love scene is I believe truncated in the movie, that it will be expanded in the video version.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of that. But more, you know, and then all in all, you know, on top of sending messages to the people of of spirituality that are evolving now in such an incredible time to be alive, but also the fact that we watched, you know, rather than, you know, we've always seemed to prevail in the movies. I mean, you know, it's the, you know, we go in, the Americans go in, and we take over a people because the people are evil. But we saw another side in Avatar. We saw something else that came home through the heart and through love.
Yes.
And through Earth and through nature and through all that has been given to us. And that was just remarkable because I watched, you know, when I watched, and I was getting really disheartened, you know, I mean, I was getting angry, you know, I found myself getting angry or and disheartened, you know, the fact that their attitude, what their attitude was about these people, you know, and to watch when the odds were the lowest and how they prevailed, it was just phenomenal.
Yes, and the acting, even though they were animated characters, the passion of the voice behind the female character, the female lead in this movie,
mm-hmm.
is just takes your breath away how much this woman loves her world and loves this man. It is just incredible.
Well, I just wanted to call and let you know that I saw it, and I encourage everyone to go see it. And if you have an opportunity to see it in 3D, certainly do so.
Yes, I agree. Thank you so much for the call.
Brooks, I don't miss it any Sunday night.
Oh, thank you so much.
Have a good evening.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right, we have Mark from Albuquerque. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brooke. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful, my friend. How are things down there in the land of the Red Rocks?
It's beautiful down here. Clear skies and slightly cool, but not, it's a beautiful December evening. Blessings of the season and of the spirit of the season to you and yours. And since you said the third hour is about love and gratitude, I thought I'd give you a ring.
Well, we were just discussing the new movie Avatar. I had asked people at the beginning of the program if they had seen it, and Dan had just seen it 2 hours ago and had to rush home to catch SD Radio Live because he never misses. And he got the same impression that I did from this movie. Honestly, I think we should take the Congresses and the UN, and it should be required viewing. John Cameron has made a breakthrough in diplomacy and in understanding oneness in this movie. It's really beautifully done.
And I listened to the previous caller's description, and it sounds wonderful. This is one that I will go to see. The last time I spoke with you, I believe we were talking about 2012, and that one I've passed on. But this one sounds like something that I could sit through and very much relate to and enjoy, so I will do that. I haven't seen it yet, but Christmas sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, Christmas Day, it's a tradition. You'd be surprised, you're sitting around the house fighting off the tryptophan drug from the turkey in the dressing, and you're wondering, gee, I wonder what everyone else is doing because the streets are empty. I can tell you where they are. They're at the movie theater. You should go there on Christmas Day. It's unbelievable. It's totally packed. I've been doing it since my kids were like 5 years old. It's just wonderful.
Oh, that's so great. That is so great. But anyway, I was wondering if I could share a quick short story with you and your listeners. It's not particularly a Christmas story, but it's kind of along the same lines as what you've been speaking of this evening.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it's a little autobiographical, but you'll get the gist of it. Okay. As I was growing up in a small New Jersey bedroom community just 20 miles from Manhattan, I spent the majority of my time enjoying the county park, which was located not far from my home. From about the age of 7 and up through the age of 18, it was my home away from home. It had a lake with streams running both into and out of it and was stocked with fish. I got to know all the best places to catch the different species at different times of the year and enjoyed doing just that. I don't remember the exact day I met Albert or how we came to talk to one another, other than it was in regard to my knowledge of the local fishery. I do know I was quite young, probably 8 or 9, and that Albert was probably in his mid to late 30s. The difference between us didn't just stop at age either. I was a local resident. He was from Newark. I fished for fun. He fished to supplement his family's food. He was African-American, Negro at the time. I was of German descent, but we had just as much in common, a love for fishing, of enjoying nature, and most importantly, a love of humanity. We became friends, much to the consternation of my parents, who actually never met Albert, and who were of the most negative opinions concerning the quote-unquote dark races. Even then, I knew it was based on fear, unfounded, of course, of the unknown, because they believed what they had been taught by their parents, who had been taught by their parents, that human beings of different skin color were somehow deviant. In any event, Albert and I would meet as the occasion arose, nothing planned, and just happenstance. And I would give whatever I caught to him to help feed his family. And we would talk about what I thought or had questions about, and what he thought or had questions about. But as with most true friends, a lot of the time was spent in silent companionship, just enjoying each other's company in the moment. As I grew older and my interest widened to include young ladies, our meetings became less and less frequent. The turmoil of the mid to late 60s caused Albert to be less able to travel to the park. But almost as if there was silent communication, those few and far between times, I would find him and we would talk like we had seen each other the day before. In my 18th year, I was drawn to the park once again. I sat down on a park bench and waited. I saw two young African-American ladies walking towards me arm in arm, and they seemed to be crying. They approached me and asked, is your name Mark? I said yes. They then both broke out in the most brilliant smiles I'd ever seen. The one on the left said, I'm Althea, and this is my sister Vanessa. I believe you knew our daddy. His name was Albert. Well, I'm not ashamed to say that my eyes welled up with tears, hearing the past tense being used, and said, yes, he's my friend. Althea then said, yes, excuse me, that's what Daddy always said. He'd say, me and my friend Mark caught us a mess of fish. We're eating good tonight. Then she said, Daddy had a heart attack. Died last week. But before he passed, he made us promise to come and say goodbye to you and tell you thanks for the fish and the friendship. So here we are. I don't remember too much else about that meeting other than we did talk for quite a while and they left smiling and talking to each other. I remained sitting on the bench as the sun set and the twilight turned to darkness, remembering and smiling, and as the lightning bug started flicking all around, I got up, went over to the water's edge, looked down into the reflection of the stars and my silhouette in the water, and I saw I wasn't alone. And I remember saying out loud, thank you, Albert, for the friendship. My friend Albert may have passed on a little of those many years ago, but he has never left my heart, and neither have the lessons learned by his side. Merry Christmas.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for that, Mark. The friendships that we gain here on this planet are among the greatest treasures, if not the greatest treasure that we gain on this world. There can never, ever be enough love in this world. And if you think that you belong to one or are excluded from another, you are mistaken, for we are all intertwined. And we are all joined together in this wonderful mortal experience, which we have time and time again on this world and in others. And it is this sharing, and I really appreciate this, Mark, because it's the treasure. This is the jewel that people will listen to tomorrow and the next day and next year in the archives of X Squared Radio. And Mark and I have been friends for years, and his wonderful daughter, Mariah, and his wife. And we enjoy your company and your genuineness and your connection to this planet and to the people on it. And we appreciate your benevolence and your nonviolence and your non-judgment. And I know you've been a big help to me over the years because one of the things that you learn when you grow up as sort of an only child is you learn to rely on yourself and no others. And it can kind of isolate you from other people, especially from the more deeper, more passionate, vulnerable feelings that we have for one another. And you helped me with that, and I appreciate that so much.
Brooks?
Yes?
Yes. Thanks for the friendship.
Thank you for the friendship. And sometime we'll go fishing.
You betcha. Hey, you have a great night. And if, oh, gosh, I forgot who. Oh, what, Hiya, if you're listening. Thank you for your comment the last time I called in. You're beautiful also.
All right. Well,
anyway,
wonderful.
All right. Wonderful. Have a great evening and great holiday and all the blessings that can be bestowed upon you, my friend.
Accepted and returned to you, my brother. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Earth Explorers, the third and final hour of X Squared Radio is where these wonderful, spontaneous things happen. We often wonder, after we get off the air and we're mixing things down and preparing the archives for you to listen as you're sitting at your workstation on Monday or Tuesday and go back and listen to the archives, I think that's what we should have, is just all third hours. Every hour should just be the third hour, and we'll just go deep into the depths of the subject right off the bat. But then we think about the practicality of it, and we wonder. You need the foundation. You need to hear what the guests bring to the table. By the way, tonight we were supposed to have Nicholas Redfern on, and he was going to talk about his many, many years of experiences with alien abductees. Now, you know, we have, from time to time, we discuss with professionals about this subject. It's a little bit different than talking to experiencers, because, you know, experiencers are becoming more and more common, and the validity of their claim about the experience is a little more plagiaristic. But when you're talking to professionals, and they're talking about people from all walks of life, policemen and school teachers and bus drivers and construction workers and bankers and lawyers and doctors who have some professional help to recover what seems to be a childhood experience or adolescent experience or even a recent experience with an abduction, which is the involuntary visitation by an alien race, and even interaction between this person and that race in a manner that's invasive or sometimes can be enlightening and accepted, but most of the time is reported to be not pleasant. And the learning from that experience and the wonder of it all, then, you know, we want to bring that information to you, because it's important for you to know, and we want to let you know that we're not alone in the universe. It's an easy thing to say. It is a very difficult thing to discuss, at least in a quantitative manner where, shall I say, intelligent people who have never had an experience will accept it. And that's what we try to attempt to do on this program. So Nicholas sends his apologies. He had a minor health problem. It is being seen to. He is in fine shape. Everything's going to be fine with him, and he's going to be back on the program in a couple of weeks when he recovers. So don't worry about that. Next week, we have a guest on the program right after Christmas on the 27th, and we will then begin a new year, our fifth year here on X Squared Radio, and we would not be here without you. Our phone lines, 530-413-4511 and 530-413-4515. Next week, we will have one number fits all. You call that number, and it will automatically find the best way to us. On planet or off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us at 530-413-4511 or 413-4515. So let's talk this hour about the new human race. What would you like it to be like? What are the characteristics you would like to see in the new human being? As we enter this era or this region of space in time, in dimensions, in energy, in frequency. Our DNA, all that junk that the geneticists have no idea of its purpose, is being affected by that energy. The food that we consume, the things that we drink, are affected by that energy. And by the way, I would highly encourage you this year, grow a garden. And as you grow the garden, take the untreated, don't put a treated seed in your mouth, because there are chemicals on the seed that are not good for you. So don't do this. But if you've got an untreated seed, just a regular old dried corn seed or a regular old dried butternut squash seed, put it in your mouth for about 60 seconds to 5 minutes. Let it soak up your saliva and then plant it. Okay, the idea is that the plant learns from your DNA what nutrition to deliver back to you from the ground. Those things that you stand in need of, you shall receive. And this is the theory behind the Anastasia series of books, and has created a horticultural revolution in Russia. 60% of the fresh produce in Russia comes from gardens just in this manner. So as these characteristics are beginning to be affected by these new energy that the Earth is passing through, we as a race are evolving. Now, some of us are fighting that. We're fighting that with our ego, and we are fighting that with our fear. Do you think we are ready to move away from war and conflict and more toward cooperation and mercy? Do you think that we are capable of leaving our fear behind? Do you think we are capable of leaving our fear behind? And when I say that, I don't mean that you get up in the morning and you look over your shoulder and you drive to work looking side to side down the side streets and you creep along the side of the wall to your office building and slip ignominiously inside behind the safety of your desk. That's not the fear I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the fear of who you are, the fear of what you can become, the fear of others and what they think of you or what you think of them, your fear of love, your fear of revealing your true self to others, or to leaving your weaknesses behind, leaving your bad habits behind. Do you think that the human ego can survive without fear in the environment? Maybe it can. Maybe the human ego will evolve along with the human body, and it will be able to accommodate mercy. It will be able to accommodate the confidence that we have to have in ourselves in order to do our jobs. It will accommodate the sovereignty that makes us an independent human being, fully responsible for our own life condition. We are supposed to be a sovereign being, capable of creating our own circumstances and rewards. We are the judges of ourselves. If we begin to judge ourselves without fear, but on a higher frequency, how do you think we would appear to one another? When you start judging yourself in love, instead of being so hard on yourself all the time, you can see that your ability to handle stress, your ability to handle, for instance, a hostile takeover, to be able to handle rumors and innuendo, to be able to handle the immaturity of others to make prey of you, you will be able to handle like a god. And I mean you will be magnanimous and merciful because you love yourself. And if you love yourself and taking care of yourself, then you are capable of loving another. I can tell you now that if you do not love yourself, the capability of loving another is only a show. It isn't genuine. It can't be genuine because you don't know what it is. If you really understand how much you love yourself, then another can love you as well. If we work together and we work within the construct of the earth, the ecosystem would most certainly change. If we change ourselves, then we change the ecosystem. Okay? One of the things we have to remember is that the slightest change, if one butterfly were removed from an ecosystem, that ecosystem changes in ways we cannot tell. There are indirect or third-level effects of these changes. The circumstances will most certainly change if we take the fear out of the ecosystem. So if we take the fear out of the ecosystem, it has to change. The whole balance will change. Now the question is, are there any negative effects of taking the fear out of the balance? Okay, first of all, you have to ask yourself, what is the natural balance? I mean, is the natural balance of things that we fear each other, we go to war with each other, we muster the best of our technology in our weapons to fight each other? We talked last week about the difference between the budget for NASA exploring space and that of the Defense Department. For 2010, the budget for NASA is $17 billion. The budget for the military is $1.03 trillion. Trillion dollars. I ask you, and I did last week, what in the world are we fighting that we need $1.03 trillion in our budget? Why are the grant systems, if you ever get a chance to do this, if you go to grants.gov, just go there, research the grants, do it for yourself, put them in alphabetical order if you like. You will see the vast majority of grants and low-interest loans are for technologies for weapons and not for energy and not for conservation, not for ways to live more in harmony with our planet. I watch the news occasionally. I read the news every single day. About 2 minutes of it is all I can stand. I'm asking you, who in the world has an army worthy of $1.03 trillion in a defense budget? This is nonsense. We must realize that we are the government. We are in charge of our own bureaucracies, of our own elected officials, and there are only 435 of them, people. That's a really, really small town in America. Change them up. Okay, there is another possibility. We are apparently more developed than the animals. I say this loosely. We are apparently more developed than the animals. We are capable of abstract thinking and seeing into the future. One of my best and dearest friends on the whole earth, who I am deeply in love with, the further we look into the future, the more advanced a civilization becomes. If we look at this, we would see that now we have a new problem. Now we have to learn to live with one another. Now we have to learn to live at one with the planet. This is a much more difficult thing because we have to balance the physical, the spiritual, the intellectual, the emotional. And all of this has to balance in terms of war and peace. And what we really want is peace. What we really want is to do what we were asked to do in the first place. Pound our weapons into plowshares. It must be done. It must be done, or the human race is not going to survive. Part of the reason why we procreated beyond necessity was to overcome the loss from war and pestilence and mortality. If we were able to see this, and we're able to breed into us this balanced species outlook that does not need to have 12 children to offset losses like these, how would our social structure change? Would we become a people capable of not living dozens of years, but hundreds of years in great balance, in great wisdom, and in great exploration of the universe. We are actually capable of doing this. We are. We set off from our momentary consciousness, and we become limited in our thinking because we feel that this sort of progress would not be supported by the masses. But what if it was supported by the masses? What if, because we have an incredible social networking ability now, what if we could meet that person that we really, really love? What if that person was 10,000 miles away? You would never, ever be able to meet that person, converse with that person, exchange emotion and passion and pictures and files and share history with one another, except for these social networking methods like Facebook. If you could meet the people around the world in other nations, and we could bring that love together like that, we create a new neural network that completely changes the ecosystem. It completely changes the natural, and I'm going to use that word loosely. What I mean is the existing natural balance. We upset that, and we create a new nature to the balance. And this is absolutely sociologically proven, that when peoples blend, yes, the banners come down. Yes, the nationality comes down. Yes, the patriotism becomes the subject of old songs, maybe placed on the shelf or relegated to the history books. Of course it does. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of people have come to this country and are proud to say they are Americans. They left their nationalities behind immediately, and their accents survived for generations. But they're Americans. Why can't we take that to the next step? Please, can we take that to the next step and say, we are Earthlings. We can take that to the next level. And then it is supported by the masses. I know Iranian people. They're brilliant. They're artistic. They're wonderfully sensitive. They're wise. They've got abilities with finance and engineering that stagger the mind. And they have an understanding of history that our history teachers can only dream about. And those people do not want war. Regardless of what saber-rattling you hear from the leadership, that so they call themselves, of that nation. Yes, there are tensions, but I think they are trumped up for entertainment purposes only. And they're trumped up so that we can fortify our national defense budgets, $1.03 trillion. Come on, people. Come on. The love is right there, right before you. Just reach out and get it. What if there is a new relevance? It might require a completely new way of looking at mortality and immortality. And I ask you, how old are you? How old are you? Okay? You may be millennia old. You may be millions of years old. You may have been born many, many, many times on this world, on other worlds, and are now a newcomer here. But what about making love with the intent of loving? What about expressing ourselves to one another with such care and conditioning of peace that a new world is born overnight? What would happen if an alien race came here in the 1950s when we were poised to nuke each other into extinction, and then they left with that impression? And then they came back now, or in a few years, when these changes take place, what do you think they would see? Of course, they would see a people that has grown. They would see a people that has evolved. And I'm telling you, Earth Explorers, we are doing it right now. You are hearing it right now. And you may have heard it before from other hosts and read it in other books. You are evolving right now. You're changing. Look around behind you and you will see that your genetics are changing. Your ability to accept one another is changing. We heard from callers tonight who are very aware of this higher spiritual realm. They're aware that they have been alive many, many, many times. They have this knowledge. It isn't faith. It's absolute knowing. It's absolute knowing. And they can stand on it and they can reach toward you. The race is evolving. That's what they would see. And the human race, the race of Earth, is about to join the galactic community. We can do it. We're almost there. So what are the two preconditions that we should strive for in order to be ready for this new change? My friend gave me the answer today. Love yourself. Love yourself. This is a precondition. And then being humble is a precondition. To be able to receive this information. You block this information with your ego. You block this information with your religious tradition or your prejudice for color, for nationality, for religious affiliation. You block this and you will block the evolution. Being humble is a precondition to be able to receive this information. Be careful from where it comes. It will most assuredly come from a source that you do not expect. Maybe even a talk radio program on Sunday evening. Maybe even a child. Maybe even a beautiful woman or a wonderful man or even nature itself. It will most assuredly come from a source that you do not expect and perhaps would not respect right now. The key is to keep your soul tuned to a state of love. If you cannot turn away from the fear, if you can't tune the fear out of your heart, out of your soul, and accept a condition of love, you're not going to hear it. You're not going to be able to receive this information. You're going to approach it with fear. You're going to condemn it because it's not written in your holy book. You're going to condemn it because your preacher tells you it's not true. You're going to condemn it because your family tradition or your religious tradition forbids you to consider the logic of it, even though the cells and the molecules inside your cells are screaming at you of the truth of it. Don't walk out in the noonday sun and look up at the sun and say it is dark. Open your eyes and you will see. Do you think that the human race is ready for this? I do. I do. I want to know. Email me. We only got about 6 minutes left. No time for another phone call unless you want to squeeze one in, 530-413-4511. I want you to tell me your thoughts on this if you've got it. It's bagnew@x2-radio.com. bagnew@x2-radio.com. Email me. Let me know your thoughts. I promise I will respect you and bring your thoughts onto the program. There are those out there who are saying, and nothing is going to happen in 2012. It's just another Y2K. Well, where is the romance in this? Where is the hope in such a message? We have an opportunity to take advantage, to make use of the tremendous amount of energy and work that the Maya have done, the tremendous amount of work and energy that Jesus did in laying out these words for us and telling us who we are and what we can become. Okay? I can tell you that in the religious writings that proliferate in the United States, primarily Christian, these principles were once in these scriptures. They were in the New Testament. They were in the Old Testament. And they have been expunged systematically from translation to translation, from dynasty to dynasty. If you go back to the ancient works, the works that precursed the works that you now read in your local religious bookstore, you will see it was once there. And it was removed by the pride and the fear of men, because they did not want you to be sovereign beings. They wanted you to go through their priests. They wanted you to go through their pastors, through their bishops, through their fathers and their nuns. They wanted you to go through their people to reach God. You do not have to do this. You can reach God on your own. In fact, if you just look in the mirror, you'll get it. You'll have it. X Squared Radio has one more program in 2009, and then we enter 2010. It'll be our fifth year. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you, how much I'm thankful for you. And I know some of you listen every single Sunday live, and some of you listen on your archives. Our intention is pure. We want you to bring the mysteries of the universe and the earth, link the past to the future, right here in this program. Try to approach it from as pure and loving and logical and scientific way all at one time. I know, it's a mess, but that's why we keep coming back for more. It's like dessert for 3 hours. I appreciate you, and I would tell you, Ani Mabsut, Ani Mabsut. Peace, and have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas with your family. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.